Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Link.
And I'm Rhett. This week at the Round Table of Dim Lighting, we will be talking about the new Good Mythical Morning, but more specifically, the response we've gotten to the new Good Mythical Morning and how we as creators have been...
And as humans...
Taking...
Have been taking it.
Taking it. We've really been taking it right in the... Whoop!
In the ear. Here's the... And spoiler alert... We haven't been taking it that well. No, well, it's an interesting thing. We'll get into all that, but yeah. Well, we should just get into
it.
We are going to
get into all that right now.
Well, okay, so after a couple of episodes, then in A Good Mythical More, we addressed some feedback on the show being longer. With four videos, with different things happening. It's amazing how good I felt after recording that video, but it wasn't up yet, and I was just giving, I just felt like I was honest, and I was addressing some misconceptions, and you know, it's something we've done before. And then when it comes out, whenever something goes sideways that maybe we didn't anticipate and we get negative feedback, if we like write a long comment and explain ourselves, or if we make a vlog or do like we did in Good Mythical More and explain ourselves, that it we tend to get on the same page with the audience. Mm-hmm. And in anticipation of that, I actually felt better because I'm like, oh gosh, I just wish I could respond to all these comments.
But I think what we're doing-
That didn't put it to rest. I think this is an opportunity for us to talk at length about it, and even more episodes have come out and more comments have come in and the conversation continues. So
yeah, I think
it's another data point.
We can put, you know, we can talk even more, I don't wanna say candidly because we talked very candidly in Good Mythical More, but I think we will talk a little bit more candidly in terms of like our feelings about it because we haven't talked about, legitimately, just a second ago, we were like, oh, we gotta do an Ear Biscuit. And we were like, well, let's just talk about how we've been processing this whole GMM thing and like the comments and how we've been dealing with it, the conversations we've been having because-
For a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And but then we were like, no, let's just take this whole time and talk about it.
Yeah, we thought we might just do the intro, but we're gonna do the whole thing. And so we haven't planned what we're going to say. So again, this is one of the great things about Ear Biscuits, I would hope from your perspective, is that this is a real-time processing of how all the stuff. And of course, we're recording this about a week and a half or so before it'll go up. So who knows what'll happen in the next week and a half. But this is where we're processing Good Mythical Morning a week and a half into the new format, having gotten that much feedback from people. So
maybe let's take a step back in order to set the table. I assume as a listener, you've watched the episodes and you've even watched us give feedback in that Good Mythical Morning where we said our response to your comments or whatever, I think that's what we called it, or something very similar to that. But for many, so some of this is by way of review, but for many, many months, we've been planning the expansion of Good Mythical Morning without making an announcement about it. And we knew from the moment that we were going to dramatically change Good Mythical Morning by making it longer and by breaking it up into episode segments, breaking the episode up into segments, that it was a danger. We were in a danger zone.
Oh yeah.
You know, because if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it, you know, you hear this in the comments. It's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I wasn't asking for anything different. But we were convinced that we needed to expand the show. We needed to do something.
Well,
we needed to do something different with it.
More specifically, because I think this is one of the things that will happen. Hopefully, through this conversation, is those of you who have asked specific questions about why did you guys do this? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. So why did you do it? We're going to answer that. those of you who, many, many different accusations about, you guys obviously are just doing this for money. And you guys didn't address that in your Good Mythical More candid conversation. So it wasn't that candid because you didn't just come out and admit that you're doing this for money. We're gonna talk about that and address that directly.
We are? Okay, great. Again, we have no outline, but yeah.
Yeah, because I've been thinking specifically about those things, and I didn't know that we would get a response to our response that was. It was like, come on, guys, it's just obviously a lot about money. So I just want to talk very candidly about exactly why we're doing this, and then like what it has been like to process. And first of all, and I'll also just go ahead and say that. We haven't been, when you look at this mathematically speaking, right? Let's just say 500,000 people watch a video. Out of 500,000 people who watch a video, a couple thousand people comment. Mm-hmm. Out of a couple thousand people who comment, a couple hundred people say something negative. Actually vocalize, and that may be me being generous, it may be less than 100, and then of course some people thumbs those comments up or they reply to them. But if you just look at the percentage, you're talking about 500,000 people and you're talking about around 100 people who are vocalizing something negative on a video. From a percentage standpoint, you're still talking about a fraction of 1% of people who are vocalizing. So it is important for us to put those things into perspective. Because many of you have said very positive things. And so I just want to say up front that, first of all, thank you for everybody who's been very positive. We're not asking you to be positive. Like, that's not why we do anything. We don't get upset when we get negative comments and be like, why are people so hard on us? Why can't everybody just like everything that we do? No, we know the game that we're playing. We've been playing it for 11 years. We make internet videos. So we know that this is a two-way conversation, and we know that our content is shaped by audience reaction. We're very familiar with that. But I think you might be interested to hear how we process it and how we kind of balance the emotional toll that negativity takes on a creator's work with the sort of challenge and opportunity that it presents. Because I think that is the job of every creator, but especially people who create things on the internet. So I think there's just a whole mindset that goes into this that's kind of developed over a decade of doing this. And there have been these big waves that have kind of crashed on us to help shape who we are. And this is the latest wave. And we're kind of in the midst of it crashing on us. And I think it would be sort of an interesting picture to kind of break that down, what it's like to have the ocean crash into your face.
Well, I think one thing is trying to identify, and as we're able to talk to each other, we're able to help sort this out. And what is an emotional response, and what is an unproductive response, and what, you know, so I do think that there's a knee jerk fear response in that we felt a handful of times, or at least articulated to each other, that is, man, is this thing that we've built in this show that is been successful, have we killed it? You know, we literally have asked ourselves that's come up conversationally. And it's just us articulating the fear that could be happening.
And that's a fear, honestly, that has always existed with everything that we've done. But there's more fear.
When you have one thing that has 1,000 episodes and then with it, and then people say, after you release the first video, you have people saying, well, you lost a subscriber. It's that first, you know, it's like the first response to that is an emotional one, and it is a fear response. Oh my gosh, if that person said that, how many other people are actually saying that?
Well, and people go further than that. I mean, some people qualify their commitment before they qualify, they express their discommitment.
I have been watching with my family for the past 4 years, or since season X.
And now we are officially, as a family, departing from the fold. We are no longer going to watch Good Mythical Morning if this is what it has become.
And
like, literally the first day.
And before
literally
you,
the first day.
And before you engage, before we engage rationally with that, we engage emotionally. Like the second you read that, especially when you're scrolling through and your eyes stick to everything that could be your worst fear.
And just to give you a picture of how this happens, just legitimately, literally how this happens, at least for me, it's last Monday morning, waking up to my alarm at 6:30, and thinking for a second, you know, I could just get up. The healthy thing would probably be to just get up, take a shower, eat breakfast, go to work, and then like process people's response. But of course, we also had to make Good Mythical Morning that day, right? So the day that it released is a day that we were making
more of it.
More of it.
And we knew that we had to pour over the comments to see if there was any adjustments that we could make for what we were about to shoot.
And what it was like for me is I didn't get up. I rolled over because my alarm is my phone, which is probably a mistake in and of itself. And I didn't do that for a while, but then I went back to it. And so I cut the alarm off, and then I'm like, oh, here we go. And I tap in to that first video, and I immediately see, you know, the show has been up for about 3.5 hours at 6:30 our time. And I immediately see just a very large percentage of dislikes. You know, we typically would get, I don't know, if I wake up and I see more than 100 dislikes on something traditionally, by that point, I know that there's something
what's wrong.
Right? What did we do wrong? Did we say something? Are the cat lovers upset again? Whatever we've done.
And you say that because that's what you saw this morning.
Right.
Like now all of the Mythical Beast cat lovers are just—
not able to take a joke?
Decimated.
I won't get into that right now. I don't wish harm upon cats. I just think it's funny to act like I do and get your responses. That's for another discussion.
But then turns out it's not, at this point in our emotional state, it's not funny to get those responses.
No, it's not. So, but I see the negativity, and then I begin to look at the comments. And interestingly, the first thing that I see is a lot of people talking about the lighting and the color. And the sound. And I think you might be, a lot of comments were like, guys, how in the world—
would you think this is better?
How could you let this happen? How could this happen? How could you be so excited about something new and then it looks and sounds like this? You know—
that's a good—
it's actually a really good question. But I will say that when— this isn't a defense, it's just an explanation. When something has so many moving parts and has changed so significantly on the back end in order to accommodate what we're trying to accomplish, there are things that quite honestly fall through the cracks. And it may seem crazy that something like that would happen. I can honestly say that due to the schedule and the way that everything worked, that we didn't actually see what exactly it would look like before it went up. And I think that we got a lot of new team members and a lot of things happen and a lot of moving parts, and not everyone really appreciated just how important it was for that first episode to look and feel exactly like what you've known and loved with GMM. We had kind of communicated that, but I think that
it's hard for anybody to— we've experienced that, and we anticipated that experience, but it was hard to convey that.
It's like you've got a favorite dish. You've got a burger that's made by a fast food chain in a very particular way, and the special sauce tastes a very particular way, and the burger is a certain way. And then all of a sudden you show up one day and they say, the Big Mac or whatever it is better. And you're like, but you changed the freaking special sauce. And the meat's different now. This isn't better. Everyone loved it. Why are you changing it? All great, legitimate questions.
But I think the answer is we changed a decent amount of the equipment that we use to make the burger, but our aim was to make the same burger.
Yeah.
And we just didn't— I'll just say it's very hard to anticipate that some equipment changes would make the burger feel and taste and it be experienced that and
this
much
is
differently.
I think this is a good analogy, which I-
And it's so frustrating when it's like, oh my gosh, it's like, that is something we didn't intentionally want to change.
And I think
now it's so much top of mind in the comments. It's like, oh, I, you know, at least it's like we 100% agree and we're fixing that as soon as we can.
Well, let me say that I think that the fast food restaurant analogy will hold up for a number of these aspects, including the whole money thing, which we'll get to in a second. But Nature Box is supported by Ear Biscuits.
Nature Box, oh crap.
Ear Biscuits is supported by Nature Box.
Mm-hmm. The source for your snacks. Is that good? A little longer maybe?
Now we like to eat, we like to snack. We're actually trying to eat things that taste good and make us feel good because they're healthy. And we have found that in Nature Box.
I'm gonna work up a jingle for Nature Box right now, okay?
This is risky.
Don't think outside of the box, think inside of the box, cause there's nature in there, look at it.
Good.
It's not nature, it's snacks.
You like nuts?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you what kind of nuts they got. Mocha almonds, pistachio and almond mix.
I'm putting a drum.
And simple berry nut
like a
mix.
A hi-hat underneath.
Jalapeno cashews, cranberry almond bites, salted pistachios. I'm not done. Roasted salted cashews. I'm done. I probably missed a couple.
Mix it up. Right now, Nature Box is offering you, Ear Biscuiteer, 50% off. That's half off of your first order when you go to naturebox.com/ear. So make sure you go to naturebox.com/ear to get your 50% off that first order.
Nature Box will deliver them right to your door. It is that easy. Naturebox.com/ear.
Now back to the biscuit.
It isn't that we wanted to change the specialty burger, it's that we wanted to introduce new menu items in addition to the burger.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, we had to hire people and we had to establish new systems. And initially, the burger that you knew and loved was compromised. Unintentionally. We have learned a lot of lessons already, but just know that the color has been updated. The color is still being tweaked. We're still dialing things in. Again, it's new lights and it's new cameras, which ultimately are much better and I think can create a much better experience. Ultimately, it's 4K and not everybody watches in 4K, I get that. But we're kind of sort of future-proofing the show. But we're continuing to tweak it. So especially that first part of the show gets back to that place where it's like, that's the burger that I know and I love, and but now I've got these new menu items that have been added to it. That is the intention, that's the plan. But we do acknowledge that that's not exactly what happened. And
the burger didn't taste as good.
Yeah, we get it. Listen,
fact.
When we watched back the first couple episodes, you guys think that you can see when we're not comfortable or when there's something that we're thinking about. You know, I actually saw a really interesting interview with John Lithgow talking about, I've told you about this, but talking about getting ready to film Daddy's Home 2 and how—
With Marky Mark and—
Will Ferrell. Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
And how they all lived together for like a week before the shooting of the movie to become comfortable with one another because, quote, you cannot make great comedy if you feel threatened. And I thought that was so profound because I totally understood what he meant. In our career, we've gotten into situations so many times, especially if you show up on a set somewhere and this is the first day working with this director, this is the first time working with this actor, like especially on like a buddy system situation, and we're meeting somebody for the first time and then 15 minutes later, we're acting against them because we don't operate at the budgets that are required to go have a camping trip with somebody for a week before you start production, nor do we have the time. But I totally relate to that because if you feel any sort of discomfort or fear, and we were on this new set, which is a lot like the old set, but it's new and there were new people, the same old people, but now new people in addition to them filming us.
Everything you saw was supposed to look the same.
But everything
now,
everything we saw
looked dramatically different. And the day before we shot the first episode was the first day we sat in the chairs most of the day and like tweaked through stuff. But at a certain point, you just gotta do it, man. And it was, we weren't as ready as I wanted to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think—
And you never are.
And well, and in retrospect—
the first day of—
In retrospect,
anything.
And we talked about this, we told you guys a lot, we talked about this on tour quite a bit, that the combination of writing the book and then going on tour, finishing up Buddy System, and then starting GMM 22, we call it GMM 22 because it adds up to at least 22 minutes. This was too much for us, ultimately, in the way that all these things coincided, because typically, mm-hmm. like we were coming back from a trip to Texas, I believe, and we basically got back, had one day looking at the new set, and then shot the show. And that isn't ideally how we would have done things, especially in retrospect, when we look at ourselves and we're like, oh, we just weren't in a groove, and we didn't complete, we weren't comfortable, we felt threatened. It would, I know, that may be hard to understand for people who aren't performers, but you know how you act differently amongst friends and then strangers, right? And there's this comfort level that, these people know me and they know, they appreciate me for who I am and I can be myself.
And I can mess
things,
up.
Those things translate into performance, especially with the type of show that we do, which is designed to be sort of rooted in an authentic experience by us.
And you know what? I think a silver lining is that I think we really grew to appreciate one of the strengths, we really grew to appreciate one of the strengths of our show, which is honesty. You know, there's a collective wisdom that we try to glean from the comments. And when words like sincerity or honesty come up in there, it's like, okay, that's something that I think we embodied, but I think we are much more intimately acquainted with that being a cornerstone of what our show is, like a level of honesty in our performance, that it's actually performance may not even, it is a performance, but it's not, do you know what I'm saying? It's not actually 100% a performance. It's like, it's honest being. And it's a real, there's a real conversation.
We're being ourselves.
There's real remarks.
We're reacting in the moment.
And you know what? We're still, every second we shoot something, I'm still thinking about, can this be more honest?
Oh yeah.
Like, because we want it to be funny. We want it to be great. We want it to be the best. We want it to be awesome. You know, and you're thinking about all these things, and we're trying a lot of different things in the different segments. And it's a funny thing to be thinking about, am I being honest?
Yeah.
But that's a nice byproduct of this in terms of knowing that that's a cornerstone of how we interact with our show. And
yeah. Well, let's talk about why, because I think that people could be mm-hmm. still asking, but why? Why would you do this? And we haven't even talked about what we're gonna say here. So, let me just start by saying that before any of this opportunity to do this expanded GMM came along, Link and I were having discussions about when Good Mythical, what's the name of our show? Good Mythical Morning?
Good Mystical Morning.
Good Mystical Morning. When Good Mythical Morning would end.
Now if we would have talked about what we were gonna talk about before we are now talking about it, we probably would have talked ourselves out of you saying what you just said.
Right.
Because I think—
And that's why I didn't tell you.
And I think I ultimately would have said, we should talk about it. I mean, I just talked about honesty for the past couple of minutes. So I'm glad that you said it, but again, it makes me nervous that all of a sudden you're nervous. Like, what? You were thinking about— they were thinking about quitting Good Mythical Morning, or they're thinking about quitting right now. I will tell you, quitting is the farthest thing from my mind right now.
Oh, of course.
But—
because of what we've done.
But because of this. That's the exact reason why.
And let me qualify, because this is super candid. So I remember over a year ago, just starting the conversation, and again, this is most often gonna come from me because I'm always living in the next moment.
And I'm living in the security of something working.
Yeah, and I want to talk about we're gonna get into all the money stuff and the why, because I think it's in our DNA, right? So the reason that over a year ago, I was initiating a conversation just saying, I think we should set an end date. And I didn't necessarily throw out any times, and it wasn't months, it was years. An end date for Good Mythical Morning, because the nature of what we do and who we are is that we create and we evolve and we change and we embark on new challenges, and that's what we get off on, and that's who we are. And I know that people don't wanna hear that, and people are like, but this show means this much to me, and why would you abandon us? It's tough. Because we do understand that what we do for some people is almost like a service. We're like in the service industry of what we do and giving you guys something. But I'll be just quite honest and say that I'm not going to do that at the expense of my personal sanity, at the expense of my family's sanity or health. And also, the reason that we started Good Mythical Morning is because it was a new thing, a new challenge to embark on. And I do think that everything in life should have a beginning, middle, and end. And I don't know when the end of anything that we're doing is going to come, but it's just in our nature to say, let's not just let something just dwindle off into oblivion, but let's do something really, really well for a certain amount of time. And then when its time has come to end, let's end it and try something new. And I've always approached things, we've always approached things like that. I might initiate some of that, but that doesn't mean that's not the way that you also approach things. Sometimes you just might need to be talked into it, but it's in your nature as well.
Well, I remember one of the main conversations we were having, and if you were to guess when this conversation happened, well, I'm about to tell you, so go ahead and get the guess in your mind. It was on the way back from Venice Beach after we were shooting the roller skating scene from Buddy System season one. Mm-hmm. So we're talking a year and a half ago, guys, that we were talking about how much longer, because we had taken a break from Good Mythical Morning to shoot Buddy System, and we were really enjoying doing it. It was super engaging for us.
It was like a new muscle was being, a new part of our brain was being challenged and awakened.
But we were talking about what we had to talk about going back to Good Mythical Morning, because we had to have some preliminary discussions about the conversation we normally have. What's going to change? What do we want to bring to the table when we start shooting the next season? And the energy that we brought to it was, I just don't want to talk about it. I don't know if I want to do it, you know? And we knew we were going to do it, but we were just being honest about how excited we were to do it. And it was because it was going back to the same thing we had done so much, and is it gonna really just be the same thing? How much stuff can we keep eating?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about those things. And this
actually speaks, just briefly, sidebar, it speaks to the criticism that a lot of people have had about Good Mythical Morning over the years. And I see these comments kind of being filtered in with everything else that's going on now. It's like, why don't you guys go back to what the show was initially, just two guys, two friends talking to each other? Well, you guys, we're way past that. We've been past that for a number of seasons. And the very simple reaction to that is, we didn't want to do that five times a week. That's not what we wanted to do.
It's funny,
and we quickly ran out of stories to tell and things to talk about, and needed things to do. And
but
that's why
I
the
did.
Show became.
In that same conversation, I proposed that I was like, not in the fall, but then in January, let's go back and let's just bare bones this thing, and let's make it something like that. Cause at least it'll like shake us up, and it won't be about anything that we do besides the thoughts in our mind and the words coming out of our mouth. By the way, a lot of what we have then funneled into Ear Biscuits.
Yeah, a lot
and got excited about. So it's not that we weren't excited about having conversations like the one we're having right now. But we talked about it. And then that was the conclusion.
But
we can't take a step backwards like that.
But we also remembered what it was like to do that.
Right.
And before we get into specifically the very specific catalyst that led to why we're doing four videos a day and why you see YouTube originals, everybody's like, why do I see YouTube originals on every thumbnail? We're gonna explain all that. But I just wanna talk quickly about our trip to DC and how we went into the Air and Space Museum and we spent a lot of time at the Wright Brothers exhibit, and it just, a lot of things sort of like crystallized in my mind about how I wanted to explain what we do. Now, let me just start right up top by saying that us comparing ourselves to the Wright Brothers is inherently pretentious. And I'm not saying that we're doing anything as significant as building a plane. We're not inventing a whole new industry. We're just making internet videos, which the ones that get the most views are the ones in which Link vomits. Okay, this is not sophisticated stuff. There's nothing to be commended about. We're just having a blast on the internet and we found a loophole and we're getting paid very well to do this. That's just the honest truth. But we did play the Wright Brothers at one point in an epic rap battle, so we have some right.
And the first flight was in our home state.
It was, so even though they're from Ohio, and we know that the people of Ohio claim them.
There's a kindred spirit
they
there.
They did it in North Carolina, so screw you, Ohio.
But yeah, they have this room that walks you through what they were like as people, and then the different stages of invention that led to the first powered plane.
And all
the first plane, and it's there, guys.
Yeah, the literal plane. All the things in this particular exhibit, I think the reason that it resonates so much with us is because you've got these two guys who are brothers who have known each other their whole lives, which that's a great way to describe us, either a married couple or brothers, more than friends.
What about married brothers?
Married brothers, that's us, incestuous brothers. That took a left turn. And also working on something that doesn't have an incredible amount of outside influence or precedent, right? So yes, so it's just like two dudes in a room kind of batting things back and forth and constantly updating things and trying to make it better and having a goal in mind and just working and probably fighting a lot and arguing over that. It was just such a compelling story. And then we saw the different iterations of flight. And one of the first things that they ever did, of course, they were bicycle mechanics at first, but then they moved on from being interested in bicycles to saying, okay, let's figure this flight thing out. And I'm sure they were incredible bicycle mechanics, and I'm sure that they were doing some incredible things in the world of bicycling, and I'm sure they had people who loved what they did with bicycles, but they weren't meant to just keep doing bicycles because it was in their nature to try to move to the airplane. And I'm sure that when they started experimenting with flight, there were people who loved their bicycles who got very upset with them. Again, this is a pretentious analogy. I don't think that what we're doing is as significant as moving from bicycles to flight, but just stick with me.
Stop being so pretentious.
And then when they got to this point where they actually, at one point, they invented a kite that was a bi-wing kite that was up there on display in this museum. And this is the beginning of them kind of figuring out gliding and just the power of a wing, way before they got to propelled, you know, an actual plane with a motor.
Steering it. Or steering,
or a person on it. And I'm sure that kite was super cool, and I'm sure there were people who loved that kite and were like, this is the coolest thing, you guys invented this awesome double wing kite. In some ways, asking us to continue to make the exact same show, to make the exact same product in the exact same way that people like, is like telling the Wright brothers to stop with the bicycle or to stop with the bi-wing. It's in their nature to continue to iterate, to learn, to move, to do things that could potentially fail. I mean, they took a huge risk when they stopped doing a very, very reliable business and started trying to do something that was pretty harebrained and crazy, and people could get hurt and people could fail and other people could beat them to it. But it wasn't like they just started and said, hey, wouldn't it be neat to make an airplane? That's not how this whole thing works. And I think if you're a creative person, I think you'll relate to this. You can't help but create and innovate. If you're creative, you're not doing something to try to meet some nebulous goal. You're not doing something to try to meet somebody's expectations. No, you're literally doing it because you cannot help. The reason Good Mythical Morning has changed, the reason that we started Good Mythical Morning, the reason that we did Buddy System, the reason that we wrote the book, the reason that we did a tour, the reason that we're gonna do whatever we're gonna do next year is because we can't help it. We honestly can't help it. That's the starting point for everything that we do. It is in our DNA. We're built to do this kind of thing and to create and innovate, and we can't stop it.
The difficult thing is when you fail. I mean, it was fascinating that once they, it was after they had patented the plane that they started meeting with people. Of course, the first way to make money is through military exploits of a plane. And they were doing a demonstration where they took a guy up who was a potential buyer from the military, and they're like flying him around and showing him the capabilities, and they crash and kill the guy.
He died, and Orville was very, very seriously injured in that as well.
And thank goodness our failures are not life and death, but to us on an emotional level, sometimes
they feel that way.
It's been feeling that way every day for us, because I won't say every single day, but I would say every day we shoot, there's at least something, or that we're trying something in a segment that is not what Good Mythical Morning has ever been. It's something new that is experimental. And sometimes before we do it, we're like, we can't film this if we don't believe in it. We have to believe in it, or it'll never take off, so to speak.
And while we believe in everything that we do, we also firmly believe that not everything is going to work.
And some things we don't believe in as wholeheartedly as other things. And you know, it's difficult to give it your best, and then when it's done, that's the next point. You're like, that didn't work. And we're not at a point, because of the way we've committed in terms of production to like building these episodes, we can't. And I mean, this is not ideal, but we can't cut something. You know, it's like, so there's a silver lining to putting something out that's like, you know what, this is not our best work. And it is, we're still going to learn something. And it can be argued that you learn a lot more from failure than from success. But let me tell you, it's hard. Last night, you know, Stevie sent a Slack and she was like, fans aren't gonna like so-and-so segment.
Because
she saw it, and we're like, we already knew that. And then I'm like, can we pull it? Can't pull it. You know, and it's
so
like-
So you put it out there and you learn your lesson.
Like, why are we're inviting more critical feedback that we already know. That's like walking into a burning building where there's no one to rescue is what it feels like. This is just for our own pain.
Let's come back to the whole, like the way that we're seeing the process of like throwing things out there and learning from them.
Because
I want to continue with the story of like why, because I still haven't talked about money and I know everybody wants to hear about that.
We should go back to that, because so we've made the point that we're, from a creative standpoint, we're compelled to remain, we have to remain engaged. It's what we talked about, and it's just how we work.
And when we say things as audacious in some of your minds as one day GMM will end, or we are having that conversation, it's because we know that when it ends, something else begins, and that's what we live for, right? And so, and there is a balance between wanting to do things that make audiences happy, because it's so amazing how like there's people who do daily vlogs and then they stop, and then people can love you so much, and the day you change the thing that you've been giving them, they become like a druggie who has suddenly been taken, who's been taken off of their, you know, their supply, and they turn, like we read the drug dealers in this analogy, and they suddenly hate the drug dealer. And so I've seen it a million times how quickly an audience will turn on you and begin making all kinds of accusations about how you've gotten to Hollywood, you've lost focus, you're not rooted anymore, you forgot who you are, you forgot where you came from, it's all about the money, and this to begin just unloading judgment on you. And it's, you know, I love the relationship we have with the fans, and I love the fact that we do take feedback. And they have made all this possible. We couldn't, two guys just hanging out in a room being funny with each other does not a job make unless there are people to watch them and then sell advertising against. That's how this whole thing works. But it's just to be completely honest, it just kind of sucks to know that the day that you take something away or you change something, the avalanche starts, and it was never about liking you. It was about liking what you were being given. And I know that there's a lot of mythical beasts who that's not what it's about at all and have been are gonna be supportive through everything and kind of get this. But there's a lot of people out there who this is a transactional relationship. We produce, they consume, and the moment we change the thing they consume, they get very mad at the producer. And it's just a reality, and I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining about it at all. We signed up for this. It's just an unfortunate reality of humanity that it's not a love relationship. It's a consumer relationship. And the moment that it changes, they become very angry consumers. I get it, it's just an unfortunate reality. But let's talk specifically about the money. Because I think those people who are levying this particular accusation that, just be honest guys, you did this to get more ad revenue. 4 times the videos, 4 times the ad revenue. I think I would venture to say that the people who have levied that accusation are A, not particularly creative people, and B, definitely not business owners. It's an interesting thing to run a creative business. When your business is to entertain people, there are 2 things that you have to weigh constantly. The first that you have to weigh is, are you creating something that is going to be received well? Like, are you doing a good job creating the thing that you're supposed to use to entertain people? But the second thing you have to ask, and you have to ask these questions in tandem at the same time, every single time, is this a financially responsible choice? So, and especially when you get to a place where we're at right now, where this isn't just 2 guys, this is a corporation, has been a corporation for years, for like 7 years, but now it's a place where a lot of people are working, a lot of people are depending on their livelihood. There's dozens and dozens of people who work at Mythical Entertainment. So we're not just these dudes that come in and just say on a whim, this is what we wanna do today, guys. Every decision we make weighs how our company and the people who work here are going to be affected, and frankly, how our futures are gonna be affected, and how my kids' college education is gonna be affected, and how my retirement is gonna be affected. And so we don't make a decision that we don't see as financially responsible. That doesn't mean we don't take risks. This whole thing was a risk. But yeah, so when you say this is all about the money, I would say that it is definitely not all about the money, but we do believe that this was a wise financial decision in the long term, but that wasn't what motivated it, because the creative is the first thing that gets us going, and then we make sure that this decision is one that is financially responsible. But the specifics of the decision, I think we should just explain.
And I would just say I'll explain from a business standpoint, the reason why Google and YouTube wants to invest in this is they have their interest, and we have our interest. Now, for them, their interest is to attract sponsors and add investment into YouTube so they can make more money. Now, I'm not gonna say that's their only interest. I'm not them, but you can't, we're still at a point in the industry where we're trying to help potential sponsors understand that sponsoring internet content is just as valuable, or I would argue more valuable, mm-hmm. than a television spot or a radio spot or whatever other type of billboard spot that people are advertising in. Back up a bus bench spot, yeah. Whatever it is. And if you've just got these shareable videos, like in internet videos, a lot, you know, they're just, the people with the money are just thinking, well, I'm not gonna, they just don't quite get it yet. But if you start to say, okay, there is original programming, you understand that on Amazon, you understand that on Netflix now, advertiser. Well, YouTube, this is YouTube talking, we also have that. And we're creating properties which have more engagement and you have a more powerful opportunity to reach people with your ad here than in those places. But the thing that helps it click into place for them is if it's a show, if it's like a half hour show. And so that's why they came to us with the opportunity to do it.
And now, they came to us at a time.
And let me just say, and our interest in responding to that was, we want to continue to shape the landscape of entertainment. You know, I would love to fast forward years from now and see that there are people coming up creating content that is seen as just as legitimate a form of entertainment as the way people think about Game of Thrones or any non-scripted show that is Storage Wars or whatever's going on in the world of non-scripted entertainment Storage on cable Wars. Television. That was a big one a few years back, right? We are excited about, again, as part of experimentation and helping to create things that shape the landscape. And I think if we just kept making those short form videos, it wasn't gonna do what this could potentially do in legitimately making Good Mythical Morning what most people, not just advertisers, would think of as a show and not just an internet video that comes out every day.
Well, because they came to us at a time when, like I said, we were having conversations about, well, when is this gonna end? Like, is this all that this show can ever be? And then right when we're having those conversations, YouTube comes along and says, hey, we're looking to invest in some YouTube original programming that wouldn't be behind the paywall like YouTube Red, so people don't have to pay for it. That's never gonna happen with Good Mythical Morning.
That was a non-starter for
us. Yeah. Good Mythical Morning is the kind of show that will always be free. So this isn't like, oh, the first step and the next step is it's gonna be YouTube Red show. No, Buddy System is the kind of show that is financed in a different way and has to be behind the paywall. Good Mythical Morning is not. But they came to us and said, we want to help you guys make this show something bigger than it is, something that will be even more a part of the cultural conversation. And I think this will answer some of your questions, because people are like, well, YouTube is making them do this. YouTube has changed the color. Somebody at YouTube said it should be yellow. No, the interesting thing is that we are 100% in charge of the creative. We can't do anything that they would be like, okay, well, that's gonna piss off an advertiser, but we don't do that anyway. We've never, like, we don't do things that are questionable and controversial. So that's why advertisers have always had a home on our show. But they said, we want to just give you guys the resources that you need to do the thing that you want to. So the whole 4 videos a day, specifically what's going into each video, what we're trying to do with each segment, what we're going to continue to try to do, it's all coming from us and our team. Mm-hmm. And the team that has always been there. We've supplemented that team and we've brought in new people for more ideas. But this is not YouTube is sitting there waiting for, change this. Let's make it sound different. Let's make you guys sound like you're further away, because that's what we're about at YouTube. Let's make it more yellow because yellow is the new YouTube. No, guys, those were things that happened as a result of a lot of things happening at once and us kind of losing the ability to control every single element, but we very quickly course corrected some of those technical things.
But we're the one who said, yeah, so we dictated, it was all the creative in the show comes from us and our team.
Way it has always been.
Yeah, and we said yes to the opportunity because we wanted to develop the show for all the reasons we talked about, and just to make it, add more to it, to add more sides to the fast food menu of Good Mythical Morning. Maybe even turn it into a sit down restaurant experience. But
to keep pushing it.
We knew we had to make them segments. You know, the original assumption was, well, you'll just have one long video. Well, we did that. It's called The Mythical Show. And we said, your half hour of not having to click around on the internet. Well, you know what? Turns out people wanted to click around on the internet. We were wrong. It was a lesson we learned that nothing reaches out when you have a big honking 22 minute to 30 minute video. So we knew almost as another non-starter, we couldn't get in on this deal unless each segment
was its own video.
Was its own video.
We wanted people to be able to experience it the same way that you experience any video that's about one thing.
So
we wanted it to also be a show that you could watch together every single day.
So it had to, I mean, each segment had to be able to trend. It had to be able to be shareable and commentable and
Yes, again, and I think—
And to work within the ecosystem of YouTube. Now, the thing we ask from YouTube and that we're still working on is let's make these four videos plus one, which is Good Mythical More, work in a way that doesn't—
That feels more like a show.
That feels like a show and that
so those,
plays the, through like a show.
And those are product changes that are still being worked on. Just so you know, like, so right now we've got it set up so that you click on the green video and that puts you in order. And sometimes that particular episode designation tool, that segment designation tool is not up and running because there's a lot of things that have to happen. There's technical things that are being worked out. Anytime you're innovating and trying something new, sometimes you can find that you're a little bit ahead of the technology. We've seen this a million different times. And that's gonna be frustrating for your experience, but it's all gonna be worked out because we're never gonna get there if we don't start getting there. You never get there unless you start going. But I think that it's an interesting thing to talk about the comments that we've gotten about that, like people saying things like, guys, just put it in one video. Guys, just put it in one video and then also post all the other videos on their own. I like the Avett brothers say, people love to talk about things they don't know about. People love to talk on things they don't know about. One of my favorite lyrics. And we're guilty of that a lot. But YouTube commenters are very, especially guilty of that. People love to start offering their opinion. I actually saw one comment that was like, you guys should do... he actually laid out like he has schedule for how we were supposed to, we should shoot our videos during the day. Like shoot a video, then take an hour break, then shoot another video, then take an hour break. It's like the audacity that people have to start giving suggestions as if we haven't thought about a lot of these things, just mind boggling sometimes. I'm sorry to get frustrated about it, but it's just crazy. But specifically the people who have said, make one long video, don't split it up, are not stopping to consider exactly what Link just laid out. Like, we know how YouTube works. We've been doing this for a very long time. We know that if you put a video up that has a bunch of different things and isn't about one thing, it doesn't have nearly the reach that it could have. Because yes, we do want it to get a lot of views and we do want it to work and we do want it to be sustainable financially. That's why we made the choices that we did. And we're up against some challenges with the product, but those challenges will be overcome. But it's just amazing to me how quickly people begin to throw out things and just, I would just encourage people to just be like, why don't I just stop and think, like, maybe they've thought about this particular thing, or maybe I should pose this as a question.
Well, you can get frustrated with those comments, but those are ones that are easy to ignore.
You can ignore those, because
so,
there's no truth in
them. I don't think we should be dwelling on that. In order to shift the conversation, I will say that question mark amount of time down the road. If Good Mythical Morning, this new version of the show, is not better than the old version, then we have failed. And that is on us.
Yeah.
The two of us.
Now, and it's definitely not guaranteed to work.
No. Now the
it's a risk.
The tough thing is what's gonna happen, how long is it gonna take for us to figure it out enough? You know, we say things, and so that's why we're still in this scary place. And it's weird because, well, we say things like, well, if we make the first video, what we call the A block, the first segment of the show, if we just give them basically the same experience as Good Mythical Morning, this is what we talked about before. I think that's coalesced more in our minds even since then, like, they don't, you know, if it's 7 minutes, we're getting complaints. It's like, well, we gotta make sure that we're making that, we need to make that first video the best video it can be. And that should probably, that can, we have an they have an appetite for that to be a little longer than the shorter versions that we're making sometimes. It's weird because we didn't intentionally make them that short, I don't think. It just kind of happened. I think we did. I think with like the Weird Ways to Open a Cereal Box, we did three.
As opposed
before
to four.
We would do four or five. And you know, if we used to do five and now we did three, maybe we'll do four. Well, you know, those are reasonable tweaks that we'll be making. And I think in the short term, we just have to make sure that like, if we're saying, all right, the first video is gonna be basically the old GMM experience, and then we're adding the sides to your meal that you didn't get before, then it's just a question of those other things that we're adding, do you find yourself wanting those over time? And if you don't, then that's our problem. And that is our challenge. Like, you know, it's frustrating to get over the speed bumps of the transition of the technical stuff, the color, the sound, and you know, the stuff that you'll never need to know about the back end of how things work now, so that you have the experience you want. But once you get through that, it's like, are we actually gonna create a show that's good? I mean, is the third segment?
Well, let me say that I think that, two things. Number one, I don't think we finished the money question. I
know you wanna go back to that. All right, so let's pause my question. Let's go back to the money question.
Because I was leading up to something and it never let me get there.
All right, yeah, so.
Because I wanna adequately answer that because people are gonna be like, he's still dodging the question.
So we wanna make money.
In order to have a sustainable company that will outlive us, we want it to be financially sustainable. To run a company of this size does take money. So every decision that we make sure that it is going to ultimately be a better financial decision than the previous decision. That does not motivate initial decisions. We said a long time ago, we sat down many years ago and said, the only rule in this business is we never make a decision just for the money. We will never just do something just for the money. We are led by our creative inclinations, but then you bet your butt that we're going to take the best offer that we get. We go with the publisher that gives us the best deal. We go with the provider that gives us the best contract because we're responsible business people and that's just the way we operate. Given that people will let us do what we want to do creatively, which is definitely the case with what we're doing with YouTube. But I will say that we don't go off to Calabasas and buy $7 million homes. That's not how we operate, okay? There are YouTubers who do that. We've never lived a lifestyle that was like, hey, let's siphon as much money out of this company and hire as few people as possible so we can go be rich fat daddies. That isn't how we operate. That's not what we're into. We make good money doing what we do, but the vast majority of what we make, we reinvest into this company, into other people and other ideas and more of our ideas to try to do the next thing. And so while there's no guarantee that this particular move will be more lucrative than if we had never done it, so it's not like, okay, we made X amount of money and we're making 10X money by doing this, or we're making 4X money. That is definitely not the case. If you look, well, and it's also a different structure in how all this is happening.
I just think.
Well, let me just finish my thought.
Finish your thought.
So it's not like we're gonna be making four times as much revenue by doing this. You can look at the numbers of how many views that we're getting. We didn't think that, oh, we get 1.5 million views on one segment every day. If we make four, we'll get 6 million views. We know that's not how the internet works. We're not getting as many views on any one segment as we would have gotten before. So that's not why we're doing what we're doing. If this is successful, we stand to make more money with this model than the other model, but that isn't the motivation for doing it. And we take all that money and we reinvest it back into the company to continue to develop new ideas because that's what we're in this for. We're not in it to buy $7 million homes. We're in it to make incredible things that will leave a legacy. That's why we do what we do.
But I also don't think it's fair or, you know, to be in a position where we're defending our purchases or
that's true.
Or honestly critiquing how much other people pay for their houses. I mean,
you're right, you're
so
right.
So let's not do that. I just think that
I'm just saying there's no evidence for saying you guys are all about money. There's no tangible evidence in our lives.
But honestly,
you can care about money if you want to.
Well, I feel like if somebody, you know, when you're making an allusion to people spending X amount of dollars on their house in whatever place it is, I think our point is that I just don't think you should scrutinize that. This is what I think. And we've talked about this. I just find it weird that for the restaurant analogy that we've talked about, if you add something to the menu and then people show up at the restaurant and they say, what are they doing adding something to the menu? They're just trying to make more money.
Yeah,
it's like, well.
It's a ridiculous assertion.
Walk back to the chef and say, I don't appreciate you adding this thing to the menu for X, Y, and Z reasons, because you're just doing it for the money. It's like, well, if you want the new side, if you want the new green beans, pay for the green beans or not. I mean, and again,
what if the chef?
These are not mythical beasts like who are saying this. These are more the casual commenter kind of thing. But I just don't want to. I just don't want to do to other creators what we don't want people to do to us, which is assess how you spend your money.
You can spend your money however you want to. I'm not judging anyone for buying a $7 million house. I'm just saying that.
But we're being judged.
That's not, like, to say that this is all about money. If I had a Lamborghini and a $7 million house, you could be like, okay, these guys are all about money. I don't, you know.
But could you? I mean, I don't know. I mean, like,
if we didn't want to, I could say, let's not hire 5 more people and get and buy a Lamborghini. Yes, but that's not what we do. We hire 5 more people. That's how we operate. I can't fit in a Lamborghini anyway. But it's like making that accusation of
We're putting something else on the menu. I don't see why you would complain about that.
Well, and you go back to the chef and you're like,
you can complain about what the green beans taste like.
You can, yeah.
But don't complain about putting green beans on the menu.
Well, and it's like going back there and complaining about new menu items, and then the chef says, but it's in my heart to make chicken nuggets. It's in my heart to add chicken nuggets to the menu. And yes, if the chicken nuggets sell well, we'll make more money and maybe we'll be able to open another restaurant. And that's good for the economy and that's good for you and that gives you more options and there'll be a restaurant closer to you.
And by the way, I wanna buy a Lamborghini. I mean, okay, fine, dude.
And these are accusations that are never levied at traditional celebrities. Let me just say that. So like when people find out that, some actor gets $10 million to make a movie, they don't say, I'm not gonna go watch his work because he got paid $10 million to make that movie. I'm not into this because this is all about, every movie that you watch, the intention is for it to make money. Everything that you're a fan of, with very, very few exceptions, the intention is to make money. If you're supporting someone on Patreon, you may say, well, why don't you just do that? Why don't people just pay you directly for what you're doing? Well, the reason that the person is asking you to pay is because the intention is to make money with it. Now, it may not be the first intention. The first intention is probably to be creative or to make chicken nuggets or to do whatever. But ultimately, they can't sustain it and they can't do it because we live in an economy. We live in a world where money is how it's currency based. This isn't a barter system. So because currency is involved, these things have to be financially sustainable. And I think a lot of these comments come from kids. Again, I think a lot of comments come from kids who don't understand economics and they definitely never run a business. I guarantee you that there's not one person who owns a business who has made that accusation.
Yeah, and that's why we should move on because we're getting worked up, but it's not.
No, yeah, I just think it's worth saying because I saw the comment so many times and I took that one personally because if you tell me that the color's off, yeah, you're right. If you tell me that the sound's off, yeah, you're right. We're working on it. You tell me that this particular segment isn't funny, yeah, you're probably right because if you don't think it's funny, it's not funny to you and we're gonna try to keep being funny. But if you say something that's just a bold-faced lie.
I know.
That just is especially upsetting.
I agree with that and I also have been upset. I guess I'm concerned and I just wanted to say that like, you listener right now are probably just as frustrated as we are, you know? Here's the thing, like we did that Vice interview, like within the hour of shooting the vlog where we responded to comments, and like I made the comment that during that thing I was like, I didn't know if I was gonna start crying. I just had that like, or if I was just angry, or if, you know, it's just like when you get so frustrated, you just like you just find yourself crying out of like an angry, frustrated cry. And that's what I described in the Vice interview. And then I'm getting a lot of feedback on Twitter that people feel sorry for me. And it's, you know, we're verbally processing this thing, but I don't know. I don't want you guys to feel sorry for us. I also don't want you to feel like we're accusing you. I just want, you know, I just want to be understood by the people who maybe aren't even listening. So that's the tough thing.
That's a good point.
And maybe we never will be.
Oh, we're not gonna necessarily, this wasn't about trying to change people's minds. I mean, maybe some people's minds will get changed, but.
We just wanna, I mean, for what it's worth, we're verbally processing our experiences as creators. And I would like to move back to what I was saying about like what is our task and how are we interacting with that? Because it's still a very emotional thing.
Well, because I think that this could be, I think the person who's gonna benefit the most from this is any creative person who's listening. This isn't for the people who are just criticizing things just to criticize things. This is for the people who you're gonna go and you're gonna do something creative and you're gonna be subjected to the same type of scrutiny that we have been subjected to by just being online creators. And I mean, hopefully something that we've said and something that we've offered will help give you some perspective and kind of help you keep going because it can be a difficult thing, especially if you're by yourself.
And I'm not trying to shut this thing down. I got more stuff to say, okay. So this is not the end. This morning, by way of another analogy, which I don't know my entire point, so you can help me, you're good with analogy. each morning, the older kids go to school and then I'm left with Lando to help him get ready by the time Christy comes back to then take Lando to school about the same time that I leave with you for work. So my job is to make sure that Lando is wearing clothes that match and that his hair is put together.
Not an easy task.
This morning I did that. And you know, he invites my input. He's like, Dad, I'm gonna pick out the shirt and then you pick out the pants to go with it. He doesn't like me to fix his hair, but he's gotten used to it. I go upstairs, I get ready, I come back down and like Chrissy's taking him out the front door and I'm telling them bye for the day. And Lando turns around, 7 years old, and he looks at me and he's got this funny look on his face and he's like, what you're wearing doesn't match. And it was these brown pants, which I hardly ever wear, because I'd spent 10 minutes upstairs right before coming down trying to figure out what the heck shirt goes with these pants. They look like pajama pants, but they could also look like trousers that the Wright brothers would wear. I'm like, I can do this, man. And I'm not wearing this shirt. I'm wearing another shirt, a green button down. And then Christy's like, yeah, I would just wear like a monochrome shirt, like a
black t-shirt with headphones on it.
Black t-shirt and maybe like your jean jacket. But when the 7-year-old that my job is to make sure what he wears matches, to all of a sudden to hear back from him that what I'm wearing doesn't match and he's right, it was tough to take. And you know, I think our audience may have bristled a little bit at one of the things that I think maybe I said in the vlog and more, mm-hmm. when I said, we don't wanna just give you what you want, we want to give you what you don't know you want yet. And I think that may not have settled on some ears in the right way. I guess, for me, the point of the story is it's difficult because I do feel like this is something new, but you're gonna like it. Not every single thing, but the general trajectory of what we're doing is gonna be good for you, the viewer. And then when I feel like that's our job. Our job is to come up with stuff that you didn't know you wanted and give it to you. Not just keep giving the same thing. Anybody can do that a lot of people do that.
Well,
but then to hear back from them that no, this is not what I wanted and this is how it should be does it hurt? Is it frustrating?
Well, yeah, it hurts. I mean, it definitely hurts, but I mean, in some ways, why creative people do creative things is for validation. I mean, that's a fact of human nature as well. You know, the reason that we started being funny in front of people is because when we were young and we were funny in front of people, it made people like us. And there's sort of this empty part of every comedian, every performer that is looking to fill that hole inside of themselves with the response that they can get from an audience. it's an imbalance. It's like an imbalance in a battery. There's a positive and a negative charge on each side. And if that battery is completely balanced, there's no charge. So I think the imbalance within a performer is they're constantly trying to balance it out. And it actually is the engine that runs their whole system. And we're no different. I mean, we love it when we create something that we love, but then that's the opening salvo, right? That's the serve. And then the volley back is the audience liking it just like we liked it. Mm-hmm. And them taking it and understanding it and appreciating it for all the reasons that we intended them to. That is the challenge of any creator, whether you're a painter, a filmmaker, or whatever.
And that's what I was saying.
And when they just catch the ball, and say, why the hell did you serve it like that? I'm not gonna volley that back to you. Why would you do that? You're like, oh, that hurts. And you're like, but you don't understand, this is like a new kind of serve, and trust me, everyone's gonna be doing this serve in 10 years. And we really believe in this, and we're trying it out. And it doesn't always mean it's going to work, but we're not going to stop just because the first person doesn't hit it back. We're gonna keep trying and keep trying and keep finessing it and updating it.
Well, that's the challenge that we've set up for ourselves, because that we've signed up for.
If you keep serving it the same way, they're gonna get bored.
Oh yeah.
That's the thing, is that you don't think you're gonna get bored, but people have a tendency to kind of come into the world of being a mythical beast and then kind of leave. You know, we meet people all the time. I would say the most common thing the conversation that we have with people when we meet them in public is, I used to watch your videos all the time. It isn't like, ooh, I'm a huge fan of this. It's just like, yeah, I used to watch your videos. Or we actually heard a guy the other day say, my ex-girlfriend used to watch your videos. He was like removing himself from it as far as he possibly could.
He didn't realize.
And it doesn't mean that.
My response was, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that you didn't stop watching because we changed. Some people may, but most people are just like, it's tough to stay committed to something for a long time. Actually, the fact that we kind of evolve and change is one of the reasons that there's people that have been around for a long time. But
our challenge right now is what I was saying, that we have to make this longer version of the show better than just the one segment show that it used to be.
Yeah, the burgers gotta be better.
And then the fries and the green beans have to be better. And then—
There's green beans at this fast food restaurant. That's one thing that's throwing me a little bit.
Yeah, and it's like—
They're not fried?
Well, we've made some green beans already, you know,
okay,
at the fast food restaurant. And it's like, okay, are we gonna keep doing it? How long are we gonna keep making green beans?
That's weird. They really lost themselves now that they got green beans.
It's tough, because there's stuff that's gonna come out that, you know, we don't have your response yet, and we know it's gonna be negative. But we decided to try it. And and we don't expect you to act like you like it.
Yeah.
But I do feel this pressure that, like, okay, do we pull back and do we just get, like, there was the episode with the cryozone. Like, I'm so proud of that episode. I told you, I watched the whole thing before it went out, and I'm like, this is a crowd pleaser. There's not one of these four segments, or Good Mythical More, that is not like anything we've done. And I felt good. I felt good. And then it came out, and I was like, the views are down. So I'm hearing something's wrong with the view count. But then also, people are loving the fact that we did something like Backup Plan, where we went and we froze ourselves in this cryo tank. And I'm like super proud of that we're able to bring that back.
Yeah.
And do, like, hopefully do more field pieces. And then we did like a Whopper Big Mac thing, which is a totally new segment. And it is shorter than anything we would have done. I know I'm getting in the weeds here, but my point is, I'm very proud of that as a new type of video that we would not have made before, but it's still fun. And then we played a game, which would normally have been a whole episode, and it was just as good as any other game we've played at the desk. And then there was another thing that I can't remember right now that wasn't different than anything we've done before. And then I'm like, well, we don't wanna retreat back to that too soon, because then it's just more of the same. Four of the same thing all in one day.
Yeah.
It's like, we have the ability now to do these things that you're not gonna like, but what we're gonna get to is discovering the thing that we never would have gotten to. You know, I think we approach creative endeavors a lot of times as like trying to unearth something. It's in there, we just gotta find it and get it out.
Yeah, we actually are doing this, nothing is planned to fail, but we know that failure will be part of the plan. So everything that we put out there, like we've already said this, but we know that we were gonna discover that something doesn't work and then something new will work, because that's been sort of the method to our madness for all these years, is trying things, failing. We failed so many times. But the cool thing about this venture is that you got 4-5 videos a day, if you count more, where you've got so much opportunity to kind of discover new things. And
the risk is that people will, I guess the fear is that I looked at the 5 videos this morning and I clicked on the one that I liked the least, and then I read those comments, and cause I was subconsciously fearful of people saying, I'm out. Because I think it's a ridiculous thing to say at such an early juncture in the evolution of the show. But at some point, if we keep getting those, then that becomes a problem. And so I'm prematurely scared that people are really gonna check out and give up on our show, because we may do the thing just as great as we always has, but we're doing something that's like embarrassing.
Well, I think this is what we signed up for. You know, we don't make these videos in a vacuum. We make them for an audience. The intention is for the audience to love everything, but that is never going to be the case for them to love everything. But we want them to love the general direction and general effort, and we want more people to be watching a year from now than we're watching a year ago. And that's what we're trying to do. Now, to answer just a couple of very specific things, people are like, if you're gonna do 4 times the videos, why don't you just make 4 traditional episodes every single day? So it's like 4 10-minute videos. It's like, I don't even feel like I should have to. I've seen that comment so many times. That's not what we're doing. We're actually doing the shorter segments because there's a lot of shorter formatted stuff that gives us an opportunity to experiment with segments and little field pieces and stuff that don't work as longer videos, but actually work better as shorter videos. So that's why we're doing that. And then people are like, how long is this gonna go on? Just a month or so? It's gonna go on for at least months. It's not going to end anytime soon. We're gonna continue to tweak it and make it better, but we have every intention for this to be the new normal for Good Mythical Morning.
Mm-hmm.
We're not saying that it's not ever, again, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and we go back to what we used to do or something new. We don't know what we're gonna do, but we don't begin things knowing the end. We just begin things and then we learn and we adjust. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
At the risk of doing something cheesy, I wanna read some lyrics.
Uh-oh. Is it from a Merle Haggard song?
Actually, it's Eminem.
Oh gosh.
So this is gonna be a little weird. I was listening to the new Eminem song last night. Have you listened to it?
Yeah.
With Beyonce.
I walk on water.
I mean, the dude's kind of bearing his soul here. I'm just gonna read it because I think it, I just really related to it where we are. And it's interesting where the song ends. So I'll get to that. But why are expectations so high? Is it the bar I set? My arms I stretch, but I can't reach, a far cry from it, or it's in my grasp, but as soon as I grab, squeeze, I lose my grip like the flying trapeze. Into the dark I plummet, now the sky's blackening. I know the mark's high, butterflies rip apart my stomach. So you got this dude who is the highest grossing artist in history. I think there's like some crazy stat that he's like the best-selling artist ever. And I don't know, Jacob, can you look that up, whatever it is? Because I don't know how he's beaten Michael Jackson, but there's some mind-blowing stat that I'm sure I'm getting wrong. But you talk about this guy, you know, talking about the expectations, is it based on, for his next rhyme and the butterflies in his stomach, you know, I don't know all the lyrics, and it's a little risky to just read Eminem lyrics blindly. I've only heard the song once, but it's the curse of the standard that the first Mathers disc set, always in search of the verse that I haven't spit yet. Will this step just be another misstep to tarnish whatever the legacy, love or respect I've garnered? The rhyme has to be perfect, the delivery flawless, and it always feels like I'm hitting the mark till I go sit in the car, listen and pick it apart. Like this shit is garbage. God's given me all this. Still, I feel no different regardless. You know, I definitely feel that way. It's like we make this stuff and we try so hard and then it's like, it's just not as good as it used to be.
Well, you know? And here's something that I think a lot of people, I hear people say this about people like Eminem who've got this, mm-hmm. who've been around for a long time and have been really successful. It's just like, this guy's got more money than God. He doesn't need to work another day in his life. Why doesn't this guy just sit out in his backyard and paint?
Right.
It's like, the only person who would actually say that is a non-creative person. And I truly don't believe that anyone's non-creative. We said in our book that everyone's creative, it's just people don't know it yet. It's like people who say, I don't remember my dreams, or people who say, I don't dream. You do dream, you just don't remember them. It's some part of your brain you have to unlock. But I think that this accusation or this expectation that when somebody has seen some kind of success, that why do you sit around, and this is not, we're not anything like Eminem. That's again, we're not the Wright brothers and we're not Eminem. But the reason that he's sitting there toiling over this bar that he set is because he never did it to be successful. He never did it for the money. He did it because he can't help it. He's in search of the next lyric. He's in search of the next bar that he's gonna spit. And that's what keeps any creator going, is like, you just, what is the next thing that we're gonna do? What is the next thing that's gonna connect? And is it, you know, are we ever gonna connect like we used to connect? That's the fear that every single artist has. And I think that when you're doing it in a place that is, it's just, the feedback is so immediate and so raw. And it's, I mean, it's not the same for a guy like him because he's not, you know, but because he's so huge and so big, the amount of feedback is just an avalanche of feedback. So he can read a magazine and see what people, we're not in magazines, so we can't see what people think about us through magazines. We just look at YouTube comments.
And he has to craft an album. I mean, even in a world of single streaming, he has to craft an album where it's like, I went away, I worked on this thing, I came back and I'm slapping it down on your counter.
And you can't change it once it's out there.
No.
That's the luxury we have, we can change it.
What was the stat?
So he has a few different ones. He was the best-selling artist in the 2000s in the US, and he is the best-selling hip-hop artist in the world.
Best-selling hip-hop artist in the world, best-selling artist of the 2000s. Yep, that's what it was. I knew it had to be related to some, the 2000s. I mean, he goes on, his third verse, he gets even more specific about things that he's done. And then he like turns his mind to like, when this is over, because it will be. It's like, as yesterday fades and the Dresden home is burnt to the ground and all that's left of my house is lawn, the crowds are gone and it's time to wash out the blind. Sales decline, the curtain's drawn, they're closing the set. I'm still poking my head out from out behind. And everyone who has doubt, remind, now take your best rhyme, outdo it, now do it 1,000 times. Now let them tell you the world no longer cares or gives a F about your rhymes. He's basically saying, all right, you're gonna try it after me and the same thing's gonna happen to you. And as I grow out of sight, out of mind, I might go out of mine. You might go crazy. Cause how do I ever let this mic go without a fight when I made a effing tightrope out of twine? But when I do fall from these heights though, I'll be fine. I won't pout or cry or spiral down or whine, but I'll decide if it's my final bow this time around. Cause, and then Beyonce sings.
Beyonce.
Cause I'm only human just like you. I've made my mistakes. Oh, if you only knew. I don't think you should believe in me the way you do, cause I'm terrified to let you down. Oh, if I walked on water, I would drown. And then the very end, he's like, cause I'm just a man, but as long as I got a mic, I'm godlike. so me and you are not alike. Bitch, I wrote Stan. And then at the end, he's like, I'm still fighting. So
yeah,
it's like,
he goes right back into
it. He knows there's gonna be an end, but like, I feel like that's where we are. Very much engaged in a creative fight. I don't think it's a fight with commenters. I don't think it's a fight with critics. I don't think it's a fight with anybody's feedback. I think it's a fight with the creative goal that we set for ourselves.
It's a fight with ourselves.
It's a fight with a mountain that we have created to say, okay, we are now gonna climb this hill. And so I really think that's it. I don't think it's that we're, we get frustrated with people, but with comments and feedback. But it's ultimately, a lot of it taps into a fear that we're not gonna be able to accomplish what we've set out to accomplish, and that may be embarrassing, or it may be worse. It may put our livelihood, or our kids, or grandkids that we don't even have yet, at least as far as I know, in jeopardy in some way. And it's not irrational fear, it's an irrational fear.
Well, it's irrational.
But it's a fight that we're engaged in is creating something that's going to express who we are, make money in the process in a way that we're not gonna apologize for, to accomplish more of our creative vision. And we don't know if we can accomplish it.
There's no guarantee that it's gonna work. When people say, you guys just killed GMM, maybe we have. I don't believe that we have. We wouldn't do this if we thought that that's what we were doing. That's not why we made this decision. But the fact is that there's no guarantee that this is gonna work. We could have already peaked. Everything's gonna be okay. It will be okay. But we're not going to stop behaving the way that we've behaved all this time. We're not gonna stop pushing and trying something new. We're not gonna stop creating, and we're not gonna stop trying to make that next piece of content that's gonna be better than the last one. That process is never gonna continue. Now we are old. We're gonna continue to get old and older and more out of touch and more irrelevant. And then we'll be like David Crosby's latest album, which I made Link listen to. David Crosby's album called Sky Trails, I think.
We're in it
Do yourself a favor and go listen to that, just as an example of where things can end up.
We love you guys. We appreciate your support. But that's not specifically what we're asking for. I think we appreciate you being along for the ride.
We don't want your sympathy, and we don't want your sympathy likes, and we don't want your defense. This is just, hey, we want to be authentic. That's one of the things that we do on Air Biscuits and everything that we do, but especially here. There's no script, there's no plan. This is just very rawly what we've been thinking about and feeling, and we wanted to share it with you guys.
But don't worry about us.
we're gonna be just fine.
We'll talk at you next week.